The 1-2-3 step meeting, step workshop, and at this time I'd like to give you Sherry from DC.
I'm gonna do something, and I want y'all to come behind me. Ready?
Hey!
I'm an addict named Sherry.
Hey, Sherry.
And be careful what you ask for. You know, I told my sponsor about 2 years ago. I said, you know what? I think the world need to hear my story. I would like to share one day at the convention. 2 years later, here I am. You know, and
It's okay, baby.
Just tell your story.
You know, originally I'm from Lynchburg, Virginia. And if I'm going to just share that, if you check the internet the other day, you know, Lynchburg back in the days was Lynchburg. But today, we are number 26 on the Forbes list of the best places to raise a family.
Wow.
So that's where I come from. I graduated from high school, and my goal was to be a detective. That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a detective. And I went to the Army for the training, and I received an honorable discharge after 6 years. So when I came back home, I just couldn't stop smoking weed. So I wasn't able to become a detective. But I got my first charge when I was 26 because I had experienced something called crack cocaine. And all I want to do is let y'all know is that I stole the first time when I was 26 behind my addiction, but I signed parole papers 17 years later.
Wow.
Fathom that. So in the midst of that, it was a whole lot of stuff. So when I was 26, I smoked my first hit of crack. I spent all my money. I got my car repossessed. Y'all know the story. Somebody said, Rick said, ladies go first. I wasn't a lady years ago. But I had morals and principles that I would never break the Ten Commandments. But I broke them. I'm going to tell you how I learned about them Ten Commandments later on. So as a result of my using, I lost a lot of stuff. You know, I became my best customer. After everything was gone, I finally found out what it was like to trick. Because I wasn't even at that stage. Yet. But what happened was desperation kicked in. And somebody taught me, this is what you do at 2:30 in the morning when you ain't got no more money. They say you bend over in alleys. You get behind, you get in cars. So, to bring you on around in that piece, right, I stole people's, let me tell you who I hurt the most, my family. I stole my mother's rent money. I stole her clothes. I stole my father's pistol. I stole my sister's money for kerosene back in the day when you had kerosene. I forged my brother's check. I wrecked my father's car. You know, I stole from other people. I was walking around with one of them little jars with a kid's name on it. You know when you do the little thing where you get money to, you know, for somebody with a birth defect. And I was walking around with a little glass going to house and catching people. You know, I had to get some crack. So I was carrying a jar around and you know, I was getting 50 cents and a dollar and stuff like that. And this white man put $20 in the thing, and I said, oh, shit, I don't need to do this no more. You know what I'm saying? I had enough to last me just a little bit. You know, all that happened in Lynchburg. Dignity and all that self-respect. I just want to tell y'all that I went in a crack house in May and came out in June. I don't know if none of y'all understand that or if any of y'all ever been in that situation where you lose track of time. You know what I mean? And while we was in the crack house, we didn't have running water. We didn't have lights. We was breaking up chairs, throwing it in the stove in a one room. My bowels broke. The feces was running over in the toilet. It was an old dirty rag on the floor. I went and sat on the toilet. Didn't even matter the maggots. Whoa. I got the rag and wiped myself, and I proceeded to go back out there and do what I needed to do. We used to rob these old people next to us for baths until I learned how to go to the mall and do a whole change up and come back. See, I was taught that too. You take a bath, you put the same clothes back on, you go over to the mall, you steal a bra, some underwear, a shirt, and maybe even get a couple pair of tennis shoes out of it, and go on back and do your business. I learned that too. So as a result of that, I became a crack hoe. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you I was a crack addict. I was a crack hoe. You understand? And, you know, you can look at me and tell me I'm a little tomboy, so anything went. You know what I mean? Hey, if you had some crack, what's up? You know what I mean? So the bottom line is, y'all, is that, you know, it was detrimental. And I did go to a little treatment place or something for 28 days, only to come back out and, you know, y'all know how I go. You use again. I'm on the principles and morals. Then I started going to a little jail. Back in, you had like 7 days. They sentence you to 15, you take 7. You know, go on back out and do what you need to do. But this last time, the lady said, you know, she said, you can't smoke crack no more. And I said, why? And I broke down and started crying. I said, I don't know what else to do. I don't know what else to do. And she said, well, what we going to do, we going to send you to a place that's called for further treatment. But let me tell y'all this, and this is one of the most important pieces I need to share, is that during my addiction, I got pregnant. I'm not going to say it was the man I was living with. I don't know. You know, but I got pregnant. And most of the time when I come off a crack run, I get this great idea to go to the doctor to get checked out for some reason. I don't know. You know, because I'm one of those ones that came in with two or three venereal diseases when I came in. So I, you know, when they gave me the check, they said, you know, things are swollen. I said, well, what is you talking about? He said, things are swollen down there. And then he put the little gel on my stomach, and he said, you pregnant? I said, not today. You know, and then, you know, I got up off the table, and I went out there, and I started crying, and my mama was with me. You know, we take our mamas with us. And she stood up, and she looked. She said, what is going on? And the doctor said, your daughter's pregnant. My mama said, no. She said, my daughter cannot have this baby because my daughter is a severe crack addict. Now, I'm not going to tell y'all that I had to go back and get one of those things that you check and make sure if the baby's all right. What do you call it? Amio and things? Y'all know what I'm talking about. Whew. And he kept telling me, don't look at the picture. Because he had already came in and looked and gave me that look like something wrong here. So what happened was, you know, we don't pay no attention to people. So when they left out, I looked at the picture. And that's the vision and the dream that I hold every night when I go to bed. Because I seen the head and I seen the heart. Boop, 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 boop. And he came back and he told my mother, he said, she having something. We just don't know what it is. So by me living in a crack house and smoking everything but crack, multiple sex partners, all kinds of different sperm. And he said she 4.5 months and she can't have this. So that was my first resentment to my mother, because my mother made the decision. She worked with the mentally retarded and she says, no way I'm going to have my grandchild over there with me. So I had to go all the way to New York. And I had to get an abortion that my father paid for. And ever since then, I've had that vision. Only to tell my sponsor a few days ago that it's time to let it go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This lady I work with hit a...
Go ahead, Mama.
She had a thing of roses on her desk. And I asked her, could I have one? That was just the other day. And I had that rose, and that rose is in my sponsee sister car today. Because I told my mom I wanted to throw it in the ocean and let it go. I just wanted to let it go. So that's my mission. Because I can't keep dealing with those dreams and those visions. And I would love to have a son or daughter someday, you know, but because of what I did, I feel I can't have one. You know what I mean? So that is my goal while I'm here. So sometime today, me and my mom, who is my sponsor, who's earned the title as my mom because she takes care of me. And when I mean takes care of me, she makes me do my step work.
Yeah, that's right.
She makes me do things I don't want to do. She made me write a letter to the man who molested me, who was my uncle, and apologize for what resentment I hold against him. I said, you lost your fucking mind. Woo! I'm not doing that shit. Woo! But I did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she said, if you don't want to get better, then you need to find you another sponsor.
Wow.
She said, because I'm not going to be suffering with you.
Yeah. Wow.
So she'll let us go till she get tired.
Yeah.
Then when she get tired, then she digging that ass.
Yeah.
And I gave her the, I didn't give her the letter, I tossed it to her. And I said, I don't want to talk to you right now. And then what I did was, I didn't call her for about 3 weeks. And she was like, I love you and so does God. What's going on there?
Yeah.
Today is a beautiful day.
Yeah.
I still love you.
Yeah.
You know, so I broke down one day and went over the house and I said, okay, Mom, all right, we cool. You know, so that's the type of shit. But anyway, moving along, they got tired of me, and they sent me to Richmond, Virginia, to a place called Richmond Aftercare. And I was up in there, you know, the bully that I am, up in there trying to run this stuff, and the lady said, you need to go. I ain't know where to go. I just got a job at Sears, you know, and I said, well, okay, y'all can put me out. I'll just go on up the street to the hotel down from where I work at, so I won't have to walk. I mean, I won't have to, you know, I could work. But on the way there, when you're angry and mad and in pain, and you see the dope boys on the side, because back then they had the FUBU, you know, I said, oh, okay, I'm good. I couldn't even get the luggage in the hotel fast enough before I was down on the corner buying some crack. And as a result of me buying crack, y'all know what happened. I went up to the job. I stole every day. I did fraudulent refunds. I did all that type of shit. I went into the store one day when I wasn't working, went to the register, got the money where they kept the safe money at, and left out the door and went to work the next day and said, good morning, everybody. And they said, we need to see you. That's what they said. They said, we need to see you. So I went in the back, and they said, well, watch this. I said, sir, I'm a crack addict, and I got some dope boys out there waiting on me, and they said they're going to kill me if I come out the store without that money, so what's up? Woo. They said, well, we, you know, they let me go. That's where they fucked up. You know what I mean? Shit. That's where they messed up, you know. And the man was going to send me to treatment, but I would have had to pay that price, right? So as a result of that, I start, you know, I got caught stealing. Because I was going back up to the mall, and I was, you know, and when I got caught, they caught me with a $10 T-shirt on a hanger, flowing in the wind, going down Malothian Pike, with the tag still on it. And they got me, $10. All that money I took, and $10. Right? So I'm carrying you there. So when I got locked up, They called the folks, and they said, we got him. And he said, what was wrong? I said, I'm a crack addict. You know, he wanted to see my arms. I said, I don't shoot dope. I smoke crack. He said, well, I'm going to let you go. I just don't want you up here no more, because next time you come up here, I'm going to arrest you. Then I heard some said, detainer. I said, God damn it. They got me. They said, detainer. So they got me for embezzlement, you know, all that shit, right? So I went to Chesterfield County Jail. And I said, Lord, have mercy. I stayed there 7 months, went before the judge. He said, we're going to give you 25. I almost passed out. He said, on the condition you do 10 and give me 4. And I looked, and my mother was in the back of the courtroom. She hadn't seen me in 45 days. They called her and said, we got her. She came over to the jail. She was going to bring me home. My brothers and sisters said, if you bring that fool back here, we're going to kill her. Let her stay where she at. As a result of that, I went to prison for 4.5 years. Same girl that wanted to be a detective who wanted to jump out on y'all. Yeah. 12 minutes. Yeah. And bringing it on around, I end up being in prison 3 extra years because of my behavior. I lost 3 revocation hearings. I spent 3 times in 1 year in a hole for 45 days. So I was refusing to let them break me. So what had happened was something happened. I think it's called God. And some say you need to do something different. So when they took me out the hole, somebody, you know, you got the lawyers. They told me it's a place called a guest house in Alexandria, Virginia. They'll take you. I wrote the lady. She said, you can come. I got up there. My social was wrong. My inmate number was wrong. I never forget that because it's like my birthday, 201-426. And the lady said, we got the wrong one. And I said, I got to go. I can't go back to prison. I can't do it. So they finally got everything right. So bringing you on around, when I got there, they was afraid of me. They didn't know, so they called somebody called named Paul, permanent one, and they said, you need to come over here and get this girl and take this girl to a meeting because we don't trust her with nobody else. Paul came and got me. I came downstairs. I looked at him. He looked at me. He said, you want to go to a meeting? I said, yeah. He took me to a meeting. He came back. He took me to another meeting. He came back, and the only thing that I said to Paul was, you know I've been wearing the same clothes. I said, are they going to laugh at me? He said, no, they understand. But y'all laughed at me. Y'all didn't give me a chance. They didn't give me a chance in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Because I was in a relationship with the woman who was the director of the program. My sponsor wasn't doing step work. But she was having me writing step work. I wrote a 4-step, gave it to her, and ain't seen it in 7 years. Then when I got caught up with the sponsor I got now, she said, you need to do step work. I said, no, I don't. I've already done it. Fuck you talking about? She said, no, baby, did you have someone with you to guide you? I said, no. She said, all I got to say is you got to do some step work if you're going to be in this family. Again, I told her she lost her damn mind. I ain't doing that either. I'm not doing another fourth step. Too traumatic. But I did it. Uh-huh. Right. So, man, you know, it took me 7 years to say thank God. I said it, but I ain't think I meant it. Because of the issues with me and him. You know I said me and him. Not him and me and him. You know, and I finally allowed somebody to come in my life, you know, who could help me and who could, you know, listen to these prison stories I have to tell you. A lot of people were scared of that shit because I used to come to meet and try to share that shit and I hear people see people nudge. Shut me right down. Because they say you didn't judge in here, but you do. Some bullshit. They ain't give me a chance. But I got a family of sisters right now who I, you know, share my spirit, strength, and hope and share that prison shit with them, too. You know what I mean? Because that's the hit that's been keeping me where I'm at for years. Because can't people handle that shit? I don't know why you can't. You jumped in cars like I did. You smoked crack from a can with the shit like I did. You bent over in alleys like I did. You were sleeping with other people's husbands, girlfriends, and shit like I did. So why you can't help me? You too strong. Fuck you. I'm supposed to be strong after all that shit I done been through. I'm supposed to be strong. I'm not supposed to be weak. I'm supposed to be strong. But my strength comes from God now. You understand? It comes from God. Because my mama prayed for me. My sponsor mama, I told her I was going to go to church with her in March. It's April. I said, I'm going to get there, Mom. I'm going to get there with you. And then where I live at now, I'm right behind the church. And I sit out on the steps and listen to them, you know, with the tambourine. I'll be like, oh, they get that. Hey, shake a little bit. Hey, you know what I mean? I'm getting there, Ma. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm okay today. Only thing that I got an issue with today is my job. They messing with me. They took a lot of stuff from me. And I get in my head and say sometimes, no wonder motherfuckers go postal. Because stuff like that, man, will make you. And my mom made me take my bat and my gun out the car and all that stuff. She said, you attempt to do harm when you walking around and carrying items like that in your car. I said, okay. I'll put it in the storage where I have access when I get ready. And I did put it back in the car because I was going to tear something up. But then I thought about what she said, and I put it back. You know, so eventually I'm going to get rid of it. You know what I mean? Eventually, one day. So, you know, I'm just letting y'all know that, you know, this is very rewarding for me, you know, to come in here and share and let y'all know that, you know, there's new faces out here in the rooms of recovery. You know, some other people need to hear other people's stories. You know, I'm not one of them ones gonna come up here and give you all this intellectual woo-woo-woo and all that stuff. I'm gonna just give it to you the way it happened. I don't do all that. I don't mimic. I don't do none of that shit. If you don't want to hear it, go somewhere else, because I'm gonna share it. And if you feel like I'm stepping on your toes, good. Maybe you'll get honest. Come out the closet like me. get some help like I did. Do something different. Because this is a man in here seeing me in the raw when I first came around. And I had to introduce him to my mom today, right in front of this meeting, because he know where I come from. And I'm not really to be messed with, but I done calmed down a little bit. You know, the girl did my hair, so we're going to make you look like a lady. Thank you, Maria. You know, and stuff like that. And, you know, I just try to, you know, I want to be a bride one day. You know, I don't mean to intimidate you guys, but you got to come real. You can't come with no bullshit. You know what I mean? You know, you got to come. I like to date. I was told when you grow, you date. Hold hands, go out, date. Yeah, they want to get in it first. You know what I mean? They want to get up in there first. Some of y'all can get a shot at the title because y'all look a little fired up in this moment. Woo! Oh, and here's the piece. I ain't even discriminating. Thanks for letting me say it.
Once again, my name is Marsha, and I'm an addict. And I want to welcome all you guys to the 1-2-3 workshop. Our next speaker will be Rick.
I always call him Mike, but his name Rick.
I've been called a lot worse. How y'all doing? I'm Rick, and I'm at it. It's good to see all these pretty faces, and I'd like to thank Montgomery County for actually asking me to come share. And I'm going to share with what they gave me, and I'm going to let God do what he do. Because what I've learned is that when I show up, don't nothing happen. But when he show up, a whole lot happen. Yeah. I got here July 7, 1987. I got here a 24-year-old kid. And I have my 23rd birthday next month. And I'm going to talk about this disease of addiction, because this disease of addiction is real tricky.
Yeah.
Now, I don't talk a lot about drugs no more for identification for the newcomer. I started out smoking marijuana. I ended up shooting dope out of mayonnaise top. And when I lost the ability to sell narcotics, I put a pistol in my hand and I took what I wanted. At the same time, I was blessed to be on a job that I still hold right now that I've been on for 27 years, which I print newspaper for the Washington Post. And in the meantime, I had a whole lot of problems before drugs came. See, when they say we admitted we're powerless over our addiction. See, I had addiction to football. I should have been in the pros as a running back. I was a hell of a running back. They said Barry Sanders couldn't touch me. He couldn't. I didn't like myself for one, because I had a brother that was gifted with his hands, but he couldn't ever become a boxer because he shot dope too. And I wanted to be him so bad that I was right-handed. I switched and started writing left-handed because he was left-handed. Now I'm gonna show you how I didn't like myself. I knew I was set up to become an addict. Now I don't have no sad story. My mother and father still married. They still alive, 78, 76 years old. They still together. I got no brothers that's died from this disease. No sisters. My sisters never touched nothing. But when I got old enough to smoke marijuana, it made me feel so unnecessary. It said, "This is it. You can be all you want to be now. You can come out of that shy shell and you can talk to girls now." Because see, let me tell you something. Even though I consider myself an attractive man, my self-esteem and stuff is real low. It's real low. And the marijuana gave me the courage to talk to him. But see, I didn't know that the marijuana was going to stop working. I thought, you know, it was going to be the only drug I was going to do, and I could do that when I'm old, 50, stick, I could still be smoking weed. But when it stopped working, they had other stuff that they had in between. You know, I never smoked crack, so anybody smoke crack, drug is a drug is a drug. It really, for real, if they told me if I licked the stuff off the table and get high, I would have did that too. So drugs is drugs. But what I had to deal with this first step was when it said addiction. After I shot dope, I found I had a whole lot of addictions. Man, I created a monster. When I get high, I found I had a sex addiction. I had a shopping addiction. I created an eating addiction. I had a change in shoes addiction. I had a change in cars addiction. Because in using, I was sharing this last night. The doctor told me, he said, Mr. Sykes, excuse me, if you come back one more time, you're going to become sterile. Because I went and got, you know, back then you can get a shot in the butt, you gone. I ain't never waited 3 days because I had went on and started at the 2 days. They said, it's gone now. I had gonorrhea 19 times. So when I'm getting here, I ain't using no more. The body come back to life. Oh, man, look at these girls in here, man. They clean up real good, too. So I brought the disease of addiction in here. I'm 24. I only used for 10 years. I don't minimize it, but 10 years, I'm saying, so I got it, man. I shot dope. I did push-ups. You know what I'm saying? I ran 3 miles when I was high, so I do the same. I said, man, my body's pumping now. I got to get me some. So I started. I started hitting women in here. And I never bothered Newcomb. I want to pick somebody right where I was at. Because I like a challenge. My intellect tell me, oh, she thinks she ain't going to give me none. Because in my addiction, when you said no, I was going to get you to say yes. But see, I had no concept of what powerlessness was. At all. But every time I say, you know what, I'm not going to shoot no dope today. I'm going to just smoke some weed or smoke a joint or smoke a dip, and that's going to be it. Before I knew it, I was shooting dope again. So that told me I had no control. So what makes me think I got control over myself? Now I was looking, and in the flat book, when it talks about the unmanageability, see, because the first step is a two-part admission you got making this jump. I can admit that I'm an addict. Okay, fine. But do I accept the unmanageability of my inner self? Because I found that these emotions and things that drive me to want to have sex would have me doing it in here, and I could be here 50 years clean. So then, if I come in here and don't deal with my addictions and not just the drug part, you know, I say, because there people say, the house fell in, but I didn't use. But did I, Rick, are you going to ever find out why I fell in? So now I see that I'm the inner man is unmanageable. I don't know what to do with these emotions. I don't know how to process them. So when lust kick up, that means I got to get one. You know, they say one or 2 million thousand never enough. When they talk about that obsession and compulsive behavior, all I got to do is get that thought. And it's going to drive me till I get it. I will lie to you and tell you I'm going to marry you just to get it. Clean. And then I end up in marriage. And I'm going to get there too without the marriages when I knew I was lying and shouldn't have been in. So I love money. I had about 8.5 years, and I got here, and I would talk about the sex addiction. So I seen a woman in the meeting that I wanted to hit. She was short, cute, you know what I'm saying? And I went on and did it, and I got a baby out of there, and I didn't want it. I wanted my son, but I didn't want her. So she knew I didn't want her, so she said, this nigga got a good job. I'm taking this nigga with child support. So I'm paying $684 for my son. So I surrender after that again. And I try to deal with the unmanageability of my emotions. So see, I did a 4-step when I had 9 months. Because my sponsor died a couple months ago. And I was determined to work. Because I came in here, you know, I don't know what homeless is about. I came in here with clothes, shoes, a slick car. I don't know what being a derelict or a bum is. I never was there. I was a dude that shot dope in alligator shoes. So when I got here, I I sat in the back and I picked holes in people's store. I said, a nigga lying, probably running the store, getting niggas french fries and all that, and they puffing himself up, man. And that's why, that's who I was, because I ain't love myself. So when I did the fourth step, it made me see me. So it helped me with the addiction for our sex. But I didn't learn nothing after that, because I waited 5 more years, and I found somebody who wasn't in the program, because, you know, I told you I got addiction problem. So I switched. I said, I ain't going to get nobody in the room. I'm going to get somebody out the room. So I chased it. See, when you get compulsive behavior and you don't do nothing about it, it's going to drive you, no matter how much you think you in this program and center. So I found this red bone. She turned me down about 6 months before I got a date. And I got her pregnant too. Now she was mad. She took me to court and I'm paying $800 for my daughter. Now this disease will drive you insane. In the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I got so angry and bitter, I didn't want to hear nobody's story in this room talking about what not to do. But I'm the architect of my demise, because I won't surrender to this disease. So I left this program also on a religious zeal. So I came back and I said, man, you know what? I ain't never sold crack, man. I can sell some crack. I got a brother just got out, and I'm sitting over there. I started going to the neighborhood then. And I saw, watch him sit on the wall and watch them people sell their drugs. I said, man, I can do that. People, nah, don't do that, Rick. You're going to use it, man. Y'all don't know what I'm going to do. I ain't never smoked crack. I ain't going to smoke crack. So I sat up with my brother, and I was making money. I was, every time I walked around that strip, it said, keep coming back. More will be revealed. What? Once you come in this program, you are not going to be able to do nothing without no interruption.
Nothing.
And I met this one member. She said, give it away and come back. I said, you got to be crazy. But I'm driving home dead of the winter with all the windows rolled down, with all the drugs right here because I'm scared to death. I said, because the police come, I'm going to give them a run for their money, and I'm throwing it out the window. I gave it away and came back. And when I came back, I thank God I didn't use. But when I came back, I said, you got to roll up your sleeves, and you're going to have to dig, young man.
That's right.
So after, see, I was a guy that shot dope and talked about Jesus and listened to my God. Y'all would not want to get high with me. I had you crying after, you will be crying when you finish with me. And then you'll go back and high again, because I will make you miserable. Because I really believed that I was not supposed to be living that way. So, you know, in each step, it requires another level of surrender. So, when you come to believe, for the new person, it's good when you come here and you see somebody you got high with and they here. That is something that helps you believe that this program works. But I like to share my story. I had enough evidence to know he was there with me the whole time. Now I'm going to show you how he's carried me in here, but I'm going to show you how he carried me out there. God is the only person I know can put death on pause. Look at all us. Now, I always use this song for any non-believers. Because it's all right if you don't believe. That's why they say keep coming. But it's going to come a time in the program of Narcotics Anonymous that you're going to need to believe in some besides your sponsor. You're going to need to believe in some besides a group. It's going to be a time where you ain't going to be able to get to a meeting. It's going to be a time where the pain is going to be so severe when you live in that way, nobody can stop the pain but him. I don't have the power to get myself the oxygen to breathe out there. If he cut it off, we dead right now. It said, came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. Now, as my friend, I don't think Irwin minds me saying that. His word is, there are some prerequisites for restoration. And if you don't know what prerequisites, see, my sponsor told me when I first got it, he said, Rick, get your dictionary. Don't believe everything these people say. Look up these words and know the meaning of them before you get up here and mimic anybody else. Because they said it, then you're going to say it. You don't even know what you're talking about. If y'all, anybody heard Stevie Wonder's song, Dance Superstition? Y'all remember that song? And in that song, because you know back in the day, you know they say if a black cat run across your feet, you have bad luck. You know, if you break the glass. Remember, if you split the pole, you're going to have bad luck. And Stevie Wonder's song, he said, if you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. How are you going to believe and turn something over to something you know nothing about? So now, the word, okay, it said came. So that means you got to come. That means you got to come to him. He ain't coming to you, because if you don't bother God, God ain't going to bother you. It's called free will. So he said, Rick, you know of me. You've read of me. Now when you going to give me you? You go through here now. One, two, three, four major defects drove you into this marriage. Now I told you I had a sex addiction. Now, one nothing wrong with this woman. She was sent to do what she was supposed to do. Because that was the process that God helped me to come to believe. I'm going to send her to build character, and it's going to put you in so much pain that I'm going to make you come closer. I was in so much pain. I bought the house. I signed on a truck. She couldn't boil an egg. Cute. But I got married because she could hum. I told you I had a sex addiction. When I finally let go, I was so messed up that I wanted her to have a fatal accident. Yeah. See, I don't want to sit nowhere and be in bondage of anything. I don't never want to be locked up and I'm inside of here and it's supposed to be a place where I can live joyous and free. So if I say I believe, can I trust him when I can't trace him? Can I believe in him when I can't place him? Well, at that time, I couldn't. Because I was in so much pain. But when I finally, man, it's amazing how when you just let go, it don't hurt no more. But I'm holding on because, see, as a man, my image and ego tells me, nigga, you don't walk out and cut me off. You don't treat me like this. But God trying to build character, she was sent to do what she was meant to do. But let me say this. In this second step, it says some of us didn't take this step seriously at first. We passed over with a minimum concern. Only to find that this step would not work. I ain't got my glasses on, neighbor. I'm getting older, man. Until we worked this step two. Even when we admitted that we needed help with our drug problem, many of us would not admit the need for faith and sanity. Now, I want to say this. God was telling me, he said, Rick, I ain't interested in your pain. Rick, I'm not interested in what you need. I'm not interested in what you want, Rick. See, let me tell you something. I found out that God cannot be described because it's beyond description. I found out that God can't be defined because he's beyond definition. God can't be explained. He only can be revealed. So he told me, he said, Rick, if you don't think faith moved me, why don't you try? Because that's the only thing that impressed God. Do I believe that he can take me out of the pain that I'm in? See, we can talk about all this stuff in this book until we blew. I don't work step, I live principles. So until I can apply the principle slam to the pain, I ain't doing nothing but talking. So when I started over in that pain, I surrendered. I went back to the first step. I surrendered. I dealt with my unmanageability. And I believe that he could bring me out. Now, how I know he can bring me out? Look at your story, Rick. The evidence in your story told you. When you OD'd and they brought you to at 9:25 and you're supposed to be to work at 9:30, you had 5 minutes to call your job and tell me you were sick. You still on that job, Rick, right now today. Rick, when you jumped out that three-story window to keep him getting shot up, Rick, did you break any bones in your body? No, you ain't got no toenails on your big toe, but ain't nothing break. He even had the air conditioning vent to break it for. How many times has he been a judge in a courtroom? How many times has he been a doctor in a hospital? Because you OD regular, Rick. You got greedy. Disease of addiction progressed so much, man, you were shooting uncut narcotics. How can I not believe him? How? But he said, you don't think you're crazy, Rick. That's the problem. Now you go and you get married again to a woman that ain't in the program this time. Because she made good money, you made good money. You said y'all gonna live like kings and queens. Okay, we live like kings and queens, but it was total hell. Ow. Once again, I said, I'm gonna try one more time. Big boy, let me, because me and him friends. I said, big boy, I got this one. I think I picked the right one. Just hold on. Just let me just work this one. I got it. Let me tell you something. When you surrender to God, God is so sovereign. He going to do what he want to do, when he want to do it, whoever he want to do it with, he's going to do it. I don't have no power to do what I want to do anytime I want to do it. Humility is the key. You can't change nothing about you, Rick. I can. You know how they used to say early on. He can if you let him. Now, do you think you're crazy, Rick? Nah, I just picked the wrong one again. Well, let me show you how insane you are, Rick. Because this step talks about restoration. Yeah. Restore means to come bring back to its original form.
That's right.
I want to give you the things that narcotics took from you. Your aspiration, your dreams, your motivation, your joy, your peace, your happiness. I want to get that back to you. But if you don't surrender, I can't give it to you. So I look at what he done with me. He came and pulled the addict out of the street. He pulled a fighter out of the attic. He pulled a leader out of the fighter out of the attic that he pulled out of the street. Then he pulled a servant out of there. Then he went and pulled Rick out of there. He pulled something else out, but I'm not going to share it because it's not God's name, it's me. See, what I got in me, I don't even know. But he'll sit on your life and he'll make sure you don't go nowhere. And I'll pull it out. See, when I think I'm somebody, he showed me somebody else in there. I was telling my buddy yesterday, I said, man, you know, it would be nice to have a girlfriend now. You know, I don't date. I live by myself. I said, man, you know, all these women, you know, down there, I said, man, why are you knocking them off? And he said, man, shut up, because every year you come down here, you go back to your room by yourself. I said, but you know what? I really know that being lonely ain't lonely. A lack of affection ain't a what it is. See, a lack, but you feel like you got a lack of affection because you got a lack of direction. Every time I feel like I ain't getting no affection because I'm going the wrong way. So I'm needing something to get that addiction, what it need. I like to feel good. I like to feel good. I am not trying to twist my life up no more in Narcotics Anonymous. How much I got? How much time I got? Listen to this. After restoration has taken place, see a light go off. I start seeing things I didn't see before. It's just like when you try to go to the bathroom in the dark and you trip off something. With God, if you'd have cut the light on, you might not have tripped. But see, God's light don't remove the object. He just exposes it. That's what he does for me when I come to believe. He started letting me see things that I've never seen before. So that means the things that's in you, I can see now. I can see it. So I can see lust in your eyes even when you think I don't see it. So therefore, I know how to go around. You can see that third step is important. Because when you make a decision, it says just make the decision. You ain't doing nothing else. Because you know why? He said, Rick, I know you're going to be a crash dummy. So go ahead and just make the decision. He set it up for us because he said just make the decision and leave it alone. Because see, I don't believe that I can take my will back. I'm not one of one because I don't need control now. I believe I do what I want to do just like the Addams family. Eat what they want to eat, go where they want to go, do what they want to do. That's just how I do. So I don't believe I have the will to take back. He just said, okay, Rick, make a decision and go on and do your thing. When you get tired, when you get beaten up, when you get tired of them hemorrhages and them head bleeds, he said, you're going to come on and turn your will and your life over to me after that.
Every day.
Now, listen to this. It said we made a decision to turn. Turn in the dictionary said change the direction. Rotate. So that means when I make the decision, I got my man Kenny over, he gave me this demonstration. He said, when you turn, you got it. I'm facing the wall now. So when I turn, I got to go the opposite direction. So when you turn and go the opposite direction, you'll start facing God instead of running from God. So I said, well, I'm going to make this decision to turn my life and my will over to him, over to the care of him. Now, care in the dictionary says, that means I'm concerned for you. I want to protect you. I care for you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to provide for you. How did I not want him to take care of me when all I ever did was hurt me? Why am I going to be afraid to turn my will over to somebody that truly loves me and never hurt me? That put death on pause for me. That every time I got into them bad marriages, he said, come on out, son, I got you. I'm going to patch you back up. I'm going to scoot you on up and I'm going to nudge you a little bit. But see, God know how to take me and hide me around this disease of addiction. He know how to protect me from it. He ain't going to let too much. He ain't going to let too much come on me. Because he know. See, I like to fight. I fought clean. You know, I threw chairs in. And I easily can revert back. When I forget who got me there. Humility is the key. Because as a man, if I don't do something with this image and ego, for us men, that think we got some juice, we have none. A true man would accept responsibility and the humility that goes along with serving God and his mankind. I got no problem with hugging a man the same way I hug a woman today because I love and I care and I have a passion for people, period. But I didn't want you to see this because I could not show no traces of vulnerability because you're going to think I'm weak. But the God, and it talks about also the word. I want to say this for anybody. You know, they say the God of your understanding. Let me tell you something else. I want to read this for y'all. I want to read this. I got to read this because it dropped in my spirit to touch on this, right? It said, our concept of God comes not from dogma, but from what we believe and from what works for us. Right? Okay, many of us understand God to be simply whatever force keeps us clean. The right to a God of your understanding is totally without any catches, but we have this right. It is necessary. It is necessary to be honest about our belief in order to grow spiritually. Okay, now, listen to this. I was one that didn't like certain things when I got here. I didn't believe a lot of stuff about this book. I got to tell my story. I was one that read other books, and I studied, and I know that man can't give himself understanding. Now, I said, if I could get myself understanding, I would have figured the disease of addiction out, and I would have shot dope without ever coming in here. Because I would have figured that disease out and would not have came in to hang around y'all. So I got to actually tell myself the truth. Now, I said, in order to grow spiritually, you need to be honest about your beliefs. If you don't believe in God, ain't nothing wrong with saying they can't put you out. But don't come in here and with somebody that do believe, that somebody's drawing them near and wants to believe, don't discourage them or try to shoot them down because you don't believe. Because the curse of the defects of jealousy and envy comes in, and we heard the new man that actually inspired that. Because let me tell you something. Don't nothing about our exterior draws. It's the spirit that draws another man to you. But they say this is a spiritual, not religious program, but when you grow spiritually, they get pissed off. Or they think they like that. This, that. Let me tell you something. Everything comes out of my mouth that's right ain't coming from me. It's not coming from me because for real, how I was early in the day, I cursed y'all out. And then you could see me outside. I didn't care. But I care about what this program is about because I said to myself, now I do have a problem with this. I said, I can't sit here and say I love the program and can't love God. How can I say that? Program didn't save my life. God saved my life. When I OD, ain't no program. No, y'all ain't come get me. Nobody, no Narcotics Anonymous came out there, Rick, we gonna get you and bring you back here. How can I discredit God and say that I love man and love Narcotics Anonymous and don't love him? How can I do that? And then you wonder why you in here with time and unhappy and suffering. In these last 3 years, I walked out of a big house and a marriage that shouldn't have been it. When he told me, see God, you see 3, 7, 11 will go together. When he revealed things to you and tell you to do something, I move now. He said, you don't love this woman, get up and walk. I said, get out, walk out of this house. He said, get up and leave this marriage and leave her everything. I left her everything. I moved with my friend for a year. My son is in prison for attempted murder after I paid drug dealers to keep him killing him. Now I'm telling you this. Let me tell you something. When you walk with him, I'd rather walk with God in the dark than walk with men in the light. They was trying to kill my son. They was trying to kill my son over some drugs. And I used to work in this barbershop. Because I do a lot of different things. So I called the owner's son. I said, man, he said, they trying to kill your son. This is the only son I got. I got a son and a daughter. They say, man, they come in here every hour trying to get him. I said, listen, if the dude come back in there, man, I said, can you tell him to call me? I'm his father. Now, what in D.C., ain't nobody going to call the father of a son they trying to kill. Now, let me tell you something about blessings. Blessings means divine favor. Now, because this foundation I've built with these first 3 steps, my foundation is solid as a rock. It ain't gonna be moved by nobody. I don't care what you share about your God, don't bother me. But don't be mad with mine because mine show up. The drug dealer called me on the phone. He said, yeah, you wanna talk to me? I said, listen, man, my son's life is more than them 10 packs. I said, would you meet me and help me straighten this out? He said, let me call you back. Now, all the time, I got a younger brother just got out for manslaughter. He just did 11 years straight. I got another brother said he ain't never coming in. He going to die first. To steal current guns and everything. So you know what I did? I had people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous praying for me. Because a lot of times, they can't give you no information. All they can do is pray for you. But if you know the power of prayer, it works. So the dude called me back. He said, now I surrender because I didn't have no thought process of going to get a gun. So I surrendered and I said, man, listen, meet me at the barbershop and we'll work it out. Now going to the barbershop, I'm like, man, this nigga might kill me because he can't get my son. But I said, man, it's something else I read that he said, and I've said that over and over again all the way there. When I got there, the young dude showed up. We went in the back of the barbershop, the owner's, what's called. I seen who it was, and I said, man, this little young punk. I showed him nothing, man. He said, man, I didn't even know that was your son, Mr. Rick. But I did what I said I was gonna do. $700 bills. Pop, 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 pop. I said, man, listen, tell my son to stay away from me. When he come around, tell him to go back to school, go do something. Cause my son had ran away because I wouldn't let him smoke weed in my house. He graduated from high school. My son is sharp. He scored 1370 on the SAT and didn't even finish. Said, I don't want to go to college. I want to be a rapper. So I surrendered. And because I surrendered, they didn't do nothing to my son. But 2 weeks later, my son was fighting in front of the same barbershop and hit a kid 4 times in the chest with a knife. The kid laid there dying because one went through his heart. I had everybody in the program praying again. I'm trying to see you, Dad. You come and believe in the power of prayer. It works. We can't change ourselves, but he can. But you got to come. The prerequisites of restoration is you got to get a relationship with him and not just talk about who he is. My friends, the best always say, they mistaken what you say to them. It's not a relationship. It's a reputation that you're going on because not God's numbers. No, you believe in God. You can use my God. I hated that cliche, fake it till you make it. I hated that cliche. I wasn't phony on the street, nigga. I shot dope. I used to tell people, man, I'm a junkie. You ain't no junkie. Look at how you look at your place lit. I was a junkie.
Yeah.
I was all right with that. But I surrendered, and the power of prayer saved my son's life. He still went to jail for attempted murder and 6 other charges, and he still got to pray. Because he got a praying grandmother, a praying grandfather, praying wrong people in our house now. He got praying people in the other place I go. And my son only, he been in since 9. He's going to be out after 13. And it's funny, because I said, you know what? He'll be 24, and I think God going to stop him just like me at 24. I want to tell y'all this. I love y'all. I really love y'all. 10 minutes. Okay, I'm good then. We can do something else. Just a minute. After my son, I got a daughter that's a straight A student down Virginia Beach. This is my heart. I got a big picture on my arm. She's a straight A student. She's 16, and her mother beat her up. Because she don't want to live with her. And I had my daughter with me last summer. I said, come on. Now, the mother don't want to let this $800 go. I don't blame her, but it's ready to be over. My daughter will be 17 in a few months, so the mother knows she's getting short. So my daughter was with me this summer, and she said, Dad, I want to go back. I want to graduate with my friend. She's in 11th grade. So I said, all right, Diamond, you want to go back? I'm going to take you back. I surrendered again. See, this foundation, if you build a solid foundation on a rock, when everything comes, you're going to already know the process of what to do. The struggle is resistance and surrender. That's where the problem coming at, because I want to have my way. But when I surrender, I win every time. I sent my daughter back. That happened. Her mother beat her up. I got her mother locked up. I got my daughter out. I sent her to the grandmother because she wanted to stay at the school she in. I sent my daughter a phone, still sent her $800.
That's right.
I sent her a phone. I took bill money and obtained a lawyer. My sister sent her a $500 credit card to buy all new clothes for my daughter to say a month later, Dad, I'm going back home. Now the old me would have said, you doing what? I said, sweetie, I love you. If it happened, I'll be there again. Only God can make them changes in an individual. Especially when I have problems with money, sex, and all them addictions I had. She's back, everything going all right. But it changed our relationship. It changed my daughter's relationship because God don't want nobody in a place that he should be. My daughter had me wrapped around her finger. I knew it, my mother and them knew it, my father and them knew it. And this had to happen in order to God to reposition our relationship. See, a lot of times I don't like what God is doing, but I said he does what he want to do whenever he want to do it with whoever he want to do it with. When you make that decision to turn your will over to him,
You're no longer in charge of anything. You can't pick where your help gonna come from. You don't know who you're gonna actually love. You're not entitled to who gonna come in and out of your life anymore. If you actually live in the way he wants you to live, you are going, let me tell you something. Most people don't want to turn our nose because we don't want to give up things that we really like. You know, got a girlfriend, got three wives, still stealing from the job, backbiting, backstabbing. See, see, the characteristics of God are the fruits of the Spirit. Compassion, love, understanding, forgiveness, meekness, humbleness. Ask yourself, do you betray them characters? It's a whole lot of them that I do have now as a result of surrendering, believing in them, leaning on them, trusting him when all hell is breaking loose in my life. And constantly walking with him, even sometimes when it feels like I'm alone. I want to tell y'all I love y'all. I want y'all to enjoy the rest of y'all day. And thanks for allowing me to share.